You see, a guy like me...
Freak.
A guy like me. Look, listen. I know why you choose to have your little group therapy sessions in broad daylight. I know why you're afraid to go out at night. The Batman. See, Batman has shown Gotham your true colors, unfortunately. Dent, he's just the beginning. And as for the television's so-called plan, Batman has no jurisdiction. He'll find him and make him squeal. I know the squealers when I see them. And...
what do you propose?
It's simple. We kill the Batman.
If it's so simple, why haven't you done it already?
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
In one of his final and most acclaimed roles, Heath Ledger gives some incredible advice as the Joker in 2008's The Dark Knight. Value your skills. In this scene, he's found the people who need his particular skill set. They probably can't do the job themselves, and besides, who has the time when you have all that criming to do? So often in business, there are things we know need to be done, but we struggle to find the time, and we may not possess the skills. Paul Banks realized that content was a key to building a brand and driving conversations with your ideal customers. Today, he brings his content creation skills to companies that know they need it, but may not have the time or the skills to create compelling content. This week on Next in Cue, Paul and I discuss his journey to content creation, what has and has not changed in the world of marketing strategy for businesses in 2024, tactics for creating and distributing content, tools for creating content, and tips for creating content that people won't simply scroll past. Before we get to it today, I am excited to announce that Next in Cue was nominated for Best Podcast as part of the Support Driven Community Awards. If you're unfamiliar with Support Driven, they're a leading online community dedicated to supporting people's careers in customer support and transforming the customer support industry. They foster collaboration and thought leadership by enabling members to network, ask questions, share expertise, and help each other via various community-led initiatives like the Aspire Mentoring Program and at events like the Support Driven Expo and Support Driven Leadership Summit. The Support Driven Community Awards is an event where the community members can vote for various category nominations. And look, if you enjoy listening, please consider taking a few minutes to vote for Next in Cue. You'll find the link in the show notes. Voting ends on November 30th, 2023. And while you're able to vote for multiple nominees per category, please note, only one vote per nominee per person will be counted. Now, let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Cue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Cue is brought to you by Happy 2 Vision. Eliminate blind spots and see right through every conversation with Happy 2 Vision. Learn more at hapitu.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Well, look there, who it is. It's Paul Banks, who is Next in Cue. How are you, Banksy?
I'm good, thanks, Rob. I'm good. Technical problems notwithstanding, technology is always a problem for everyone, right? Like everybody thinks it's them who's the tech Luddite, but actually, everybody suffers from the same problems. Just some of us don't talk about it as much in front of everybody else.
Well, and the tech is moving so fast that it's hard to stay on top of all of the new things that are coming out. And I think we are very much in a, we are in a time in our world where when you talk about tech, there is always something new. And we're actually trying something a little bit new. So I'm using a new platform for the first time to record this episode. So for longtime viewers, if things look a little different, this is why. And we're going to talk about content today. So you're the perfect person to talk about this because you are always experimenting with different modalities, different tools. And I think that's probably why sometimes you feel like you don't know what the heck you're doing with tech, because you're always using new tools.
Yeah, it's like I always remember my dad before he passed, right? And it's a bit of a sad story, but like my dad was always on medication, right? And whenever he got a new medication prescribed by his doctor, it would throw out one of his other medications. So, you know, he'd be taking one medication, and then he'd need to take something else to combat the side effects of that. And then the side effects of that would mean that this medication over here would need to be changed. And tech is just like medicine. Because you try and fix one problem by doing something, and it throws up another problem, and that combines to another problem. And before you know it, you've spent half of your life chasing how to solve the problems rather than just doing what it is you set out to do. So I always say, I don't aim for perfect. Sometimes there's things wrong with the recordings and things like that. Like, but I'm out there and I'm consistent and I'm getting it done. And that's what everybody should be aiming for. It's not about perfect anymore. Those days are gone.
Yeah.
Technology puts the ability to create in our hands now. You're like, you know, gone are the days where you needed a big marketing agency or a big marketing team behind you to be able to get content put out there. Everybody's capable of doing it as long as you've got the time. And the motivation, I think, is definitely key to getting it done.
Yeah. Well, before we get into our deep dive on content and content creation, let's talk a little bit about you. You and I go back a ways, despite the fact that we live across an ocean from each other. But let's learn a little bit about you. Give us the Cliff's Notes on Paul.
Jeez, I studied software engineering at university. I thought I wanted to be a programmer, and I do love programming. I do love coding, but I also realized that I didn't want to be stuck behind a desk for the rest of my life. So I kind of left university and was looking for what's out there, what's next. I went to work in a call center, which was a fantastic start to my career. And I've never really left that mindset behind. I learned about sexy words and non-sexy words and things that you should say to people and how you should say them to people. And when I then left the call center environment because I couldn't work with my now wife, because magnetic opposites, let's not go there. So when I left and went into retail, actually, the background that I had in contact centers really stood me apart from everybody else. I was a very young manager. I was 21 years old. I was managing stores. And actually, because of the skills that I'd learned in the call center, I could communicate really effectively in person. So that was for me, was a great start point to my career. And then along the way, probably in the next year or so, I then became a volunteer police officer. So in pretty much all of my career, as I would call it, I've dealt with people in person or over the phone and dealt with some really challenging situations. You know, I've worked every part of the police force, from substance misuse to accident investigations units. And that huge broad array of experiences, I think, has given me like a really deep curiosity as to what makes people do what they do. And I think that's key to doing any content well, is it's not about me, Which is what people perceive it being. It's about, oh, that guy's got to get on camera all the time and he's shoving himself down my throat. Yeah, because you're not my client and I'm not talking, my content isn't aimed at you. So it won't resonate with you, sadly, but like, it's not about me. I hate seeing myself on camera. What it's about is, it's true. I feel like I sound boring. Like I watch my own edits back and like, I send myself to sleep watching it. I'm like, my voice is awful. And God, look at the light shining on my bald patch and all these. Like, everybody has those things. People think that, you know, just because you're on camera, you're immune to it. I'm not. I hate it. Mm-hmm. But I've experienced enough of the results of doing it to know that it's key to my success in doing what I do. So I do a lot more of it. So, yeah, fast forward 15 years, I left retail. And I joined an AI startup based in Manchester here in the UK that were responsible for a new breed of conversation analytics and customer journey AI. And that's where I met you, Rob. So obviously we had some conversations around very similar sort of projects and similar paths. And I have to say, like, I love the world that COVID has left us with, if I'm fair. Like, it's very sad that we had to go through COVID to get there. But it's made the world a much smaller place. And I have some fantastic friends across the world now. People who are like yourself, Rob, who I've never met in real life. And I know so many other people that have gone through that same experience. I think it's helped us all realize how we're all very similar at a base level.
Yeah, it seems to me like there was the tools to drive community that exists based off of shared values that have no basis in geography. Those tools existed. Whether or not we actually leveraged them was a whole different thing. And then COVID really just kind of forced us all into it. And it was like, well, you know, at least for this time period, you have to do that. That's how business gets done. That's how life gets done. Because you were even separated often from your family. And so we were forced into embracing this technology, whether we wanted to or not, I think, for a lot of people. And now what we're left with is the opportunity to continue to use it to overcome some of those geographic challenges, even if a lot of the things that we couldn't do before, we can do now. We can still take advantage of some of the things that we learned during the pandemic.
I think you're right. I think it's a little bit about the tools and the way we use things, but it's also like what's acceptable now compared to what was acceptable then. When was the last time that you felt the need to put a dress shirt on for work? I know, and you laugh, but you know, that was coming for a lot of places anyway. The informal dress code was already approaching. I remember moving into my first office job probably about 7 or 8 years ago. I'd always been field based. I'd always been out on location. And I moved into the office and I spent a good chunk of my wages that month buying new suits because everybody was wearing suits. And I was over the moon. I finally got to wear a suit. And like 3 weeks later, there was a memo came around. By the way, no longer are suits required for office wear. In fact, we're actually frowning on them now. And you should wear chinos or jeans. And, you know, and you can still wear a shirt if you want, but no ties. And I was like, are you for real? I've just spent most of my wage packet buying a suit. And now to be, you know, I was selling during COVID and I was selling during COVID with pajamas on my bottom half and a t-shirt on my top half to C-suite and enterprise. You know, I was talking to CEOs of big businesses with £200-300 million a year turnover. And I'm sat there in a t-shirt and their kids are walking in the back of the room. And I'm like, we're all just humans. Like, this isn't, you know, this is great because it's leveled the playing field for everyone. Yes, you're a CEO. Yes, you're C-suite. Yes, you've got a good job. You're very important in the business that you're in. But it's still just a specific skill set and a job title. And that's all that separates any of us is your skill set and your job title. We're all humans. We're all trying to get to the same ends. We're all in this together. And we all have different accountabilities and responsibilities. But no one person is better than anybody else. And I think that's leveled the playing field for us. It took me a long time to feel comfortable with that, coming from a corporate background. You know, when I was in retail, I wouldn't, you know, I was reluctant to talk to anybody who was head of level and above. And then rapidly found myself 6 months later talking to directors and CEOs and CFOs and COOs on a regular basis. I was like, geez, this is surreal. Like, we're just equals. It was nice.
Yeah, I have a lot of dress shoes sitting in a closet that get zero attention from me right now. And I'm a shoe guy, so I really like some of those shoes in there, but you're right. They just don't get worn very often. But enough about shoes, because we didn't come here to talk about shoes. Maybe that's a conversation for a different time. Let's talk about content. We were just talking about, as we got started, about tools and content. Has marketing itself changed over the last 5 years?
Oh, wow. No. People are going to expect me to say yes, but it hasn't. Fundamentally, it hasn't. The tactics that we use for marketing have changed. Marketing itself is still the same beast. But now we have so many more tactics and tools that we can use to achieve the same ends. B2B marketing right now is such an exciting place to be. There's so much opportunity. And yet, so many people approach it from a place of blind testing. I just want to get this done. And you know what? For a very small business, a micro business, an SME, that's fine. You can get away with that to an extent. But at some point, you've got to involve that strategy. And that strategy's never changed. That's still where it was 5 years ago. It's born out of science. There's a mix there that you need to achieve that's specific for your business. But I do think that the capabilities of technology have put the ability to market as a person and as a business into the hands of the whole team. So once upon a time, you'd have salespeople who made calls and spoke to clients and went on, you know, they were the product people, they were the service people, they were the greasy salesmen. And I disagree with that entirely, by the way. There's a horrible, you know, we did go there for a lot of years. And I think sales as a profession has come such a long way from there and still moving in the right direction on the whole. But now those salespeople can be marketers, and that's where I went with things. You know, I was responsible for building a pipeline for a product-based SaaS company. I didn't even know what SaaS was when I left corporate world, and all of a sudden I'm selling into C-suite, and I didn't, you know, literally somebody had to explain to me I asked the question, what really is B2B? What does it mean? I know it means business to business, but like, what does that mean? And then a year later, I've put over 200 opportunities into the funnel because of content, not because of my sales capabilities, because I didn't have. Yes, if you put me in front of the right person, then I can have a good, honest, transparent, organic conversation. And I will. I'm a likable guy. Some people.
You are.
Some people might disagree.
You are.
Some people might disagree. But like, I know how to resonate with people. And if they're a good fit for me, I know how to spot that they're a good fit. I can communicate. I can build rapport. I can build trust really quickly. But the hard part still remains for most salespeople. How do I get in front of that right person? And for me, the fact that most salespeople can now make the jump into marketing as well is both a blessing and a danger, because then comes the questions from the marketing team to go, well, you shouldn't be saying those things. And, you know, you haven't got, you know, that's not on par with brand. We don't say those things and we want to be in control. But actually, those salespeople representing the business are the greatest asset the business now has, because they're really capable of doing some real, really good things for your business. But you've got to be able to, one, salespeople have got to appreciate the market and tone. So absolutely, they need to understand the market and aspects of things. They need to understand what brand is about. They need to understand, and this is things that are all new to them. So bear with these people, because they're not marketers, just in the same way that marketers are not salespeople, right? And they would be very uncomfortable getting on a call and asking awkward questions and getting knockbacks and trying to delve into root causes of problems to see whether you're a good fit or not. All those things are the salespeople's territory. But marketers can benefit a lot from listening to those conversations to build out their marketing messaging, their you know, their lead magnet platforms, whatever they're going to build out. And never before has sales and marketing been so well mixed together. And I think that's a really positive thing for most businesses. But at the heart of all of that is that ability for everyone to be a content creator, to be an influencer, if you like. It's a bit of a, again, a bit of a dirty word in the B2B world, but to be able to influence your audience to understand what it is that you do, understand what you don't do, what you stand for, what your motivations are, because people now, especially after COVID, want to do their research before they make contact. They are now researching you in every means at their disposal, whether it's WhatsApp groups, whether it's LinkedIn groups, Facebook groups, text messages, it's webinars, it's G2 reviews, it's your website, and it's everything combined. All of that has to be congruent, but they want to know about it before they speak to you. And almost a salesperson's job now has become the FAQs at the end. What else was not on your website that the client wanted to know before they jump in? And by the time they now speak to you, they're probably 3/4 of the way through the buying process. Whereas 5 years ago, they were probably 40 or 50% through that process and needed much more guidance. So I think it's changed in that respect, but it's probably affected sales more than marketing, which is the weird thing that nobody kind of understood until the last 2 years, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that we talk about the tactics being different, but the overall strategy being the same. Can you dive into just a little bit before we get into the tactical? And for you overall, what kind of marketing strategy in 2020, we're nearly to 2024. What kind of marketing strategy, aside from being in these social network groups, should businesses be pursuing? Aside from, you know, throwing up a Super Bowl commercial or something like that, right? That's very tactical. But what's the strategy? How do I get that brand awareness?
First of all, where the hell has 2023 gone?
Right?
I feel like we've...
It's Q4, like, Paul. I don't know if you know this, but it's Q4. All right.
Yeah, I probably don't appreciate that it's Q4, because the person I go to justify my metrics these days is me, which is very different. It's... Yeah, wow, 2024 rolling on the door, and we're counting down weekends to Christmas and holidays, and and people already, salespeople are already getting told, nah, maybe in January. So I think the thing for 2023, 2022 maybe even, is community. Never before have you been able to build a community with your target audience, your existing customers, and people who are your champions who will never be your customers. That community is everything to most businesses. And big businesses have been able to do community for a while because it was expensive to do well. Brands like Apple built the community around what they stood for and that brand. And it still has to be a brand-led strategy. It still has to resonate with heavily with what the brand stands for. But being able to communicate directly with your audience in a way that doesn't need to be salesy, doesn't need to be, and in fact, should be anything but salesy. It should be about supporting them in their needs and requirements. And I've seen some fantastic examples over the last year of, you know, businesses that have created a community to support their ideal clients in a way that their ideal clients don't even appreciate that they're doing that. Like, it's just a community that they're part of, and oh, it happens to be part of company X, Y, or Z. That gives them such rich insights into what goes on in people's lives and what their target audience are thinking about and worrying about, and the data and insights that you can collect from that. That's the real power of community, is collecting those insights. Step one is create the community and get people involved in it. And it has to be genuine, it has to be organic. But step two is mine those insights and understand your customers better than you've ever understood them before, and then do something with it. Because there's no point having the insights if you don't do something with it. That's always been our big bugbear, Rob, collect it, but take action. Because if you don't take action, you've just wasted your money and your time.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the tactical. And part of what we wanted to talk about was content, and the ways that we can create content today are far different than the ways we could create content even just a handful of years ago. And the tools that we have are far different. So let's first start a content mix and content distribution. Like, what kind of content should people be creating, and where should that be going?
People are going to know that I'm a little bit biased when I talk, but it comes from research, right? Over the last 5 years, not one content type has grown faster than video. It's everywhere. And the fact that you can consume micro topics, consume micro learning from videos, makes it the best form, other than getting in front of people. Because to be physically present with people, that's perfect. That's not efficient, it's not scalable, and most people don't want it anymore these days. You know, people are quite happy to have virtual meetings and do things that way. So video, I think, and I'm pulling numbers out of my head here, so I might be slightly wrong, but I'm sure that in 2020, 73% of people said they preferred to consume some sort of short form video content about a product or service they were about to buy as part of their research, and that formed a big part of their research. In 2023, that's increased over to 82% or more. So there is no better way of reaching your audience and helping convey your expertise, your brand authority, the position of your product or service, and more importantly than anything else, your personal credibility and enthusiasm. And I think that's where a lot of brands are now struggling to keep up with the smaller businesses, is they struggle to be a person or set of people because they have so many brand guidelines. Whereas the smaller businesses that can be much more agile and the personalities at the top are the brand, can represent the brand. And that creates an emotional attachment that the big companies can't compete with. That's the competitive advantage of the SME business in the current day and age. I think video beyond anything else. But there's still this competition to be different, even in video now. You've got all sorts of AI tools out there that'll take long form content and it'll turn it into 20 or 30 clips. And, you know, that I have my, like, they're going in the right direction. Those programs eventually will replace what I do, probably, if I'm fair. So, you know, I've always got my eye on the next thing.
Yeah.
Like, they're not good enough right now to replace me. It's coming. And some people will always prefer having a human over the top of things because, you know, AI is just never going to be perfect. Humans aren't perfect, but they're better than AI right now. I think you know, when I see people have repurposed content from one platform to another, and you can tell that they filmed it in portrait format, it's gone to a landscape format, and they've got half the screen missing, but they've put it out anyway because the AI platform produced it and they haven't got the skills to edit it. That sucks. That sucks, because it doesn't take a lot to change that. It is, if you're willing to put in the time to figure out how to do it, that's reasonably easy to do once you've learned that skill. But yeah, I think when people more than anything now can, you know, I look at Descript as an example. It's a prime example. You know, I hate video editing. It's awful, but it's my main, it's what I do, right? So when I first started learning how to do this, I'd spend 20 hours a week on iMovie watching the same clip backwards. I'm ADHD as well, so I really struggle with visual, right? I really struggle with visual. So I'm watching it and my brain's wandering. I'm doing multiplications. I'm thinking about expenses. There's all sorts of things going through my head. And before I know it, I've missed what was being said on the screen. I'm like, Jesus, I'm going to have to rewind it. I've rewound it five times. I still don't know what I'm watching on the screen. And then I'm trying to find the point of the clip where it starts. And I don't even know where the end of the clip is yet. And that used to take me 20 hours a week to clip that up. One half-hour episode, 20 hours a week. It's ridiculous. But now with tools like Descript, and Riverside does something similar where you can record your video in it. You can do, and they're moving much more to this grown-up space now where you can do everything all in one tool, and everybody's fighting to do that. They're bringing other capabilities in, and it's really starting to get interesting now where all of the capabilities are going to be in one platform, and whoever gets that right first and does it well, they're going to cement their place in the marketplace. So there's lots of competitors at the moment, but you know, for me, taking that video content and turning it into text when it transcribes it, and then being able to edit the text like a Word document that changes the video and audio with it. I can copy and paste parts and it'll repeat them. I can move it to a new document and it'll move the video and the audio with it. I can scan text way faster than I can watch a movie and comprehend what's being said on that movie. So for me, that makes way more sense to do. And what I guess is probably still needed in that space is, you know, I saw LinkedIn have recently brought in their immersive reader from Microsoft, where it'll help people who are neurodiverse with capitalizing some letters, making some words bold, however you prefer to consume the content, which makes it easier for your neurodiversity. It can show you it or read you it in that format. I think when we get to the point where that gets brought into the video editing capabilities, becomes easy for everyone then. So I think user-friendly wise, they're not quite there yet. It's either very, very manual and you've got to figure out the platform, or it's very, very automated and it doesn't quite do what you want it to do. When we get the merging of those two together, it's going to make it very simple for everyone.
Yeah. You've mentioned a couple of tools, right? So Descript, you mentioned, which is an editing, AI-enabled editing platform.
Yep.
You mentioned Riverside, which is a... Yep. That's a platform for podcasters primarily. I think that's kind of what they focused on, but you can do a lot more than just podcasting in that. You can do meetings. These are both browser-based, cloud-based applications, so there's no local install. Anybody can use it. What other tools are out there that you are either really curious about, want to learn more about, or... you are currently using that you really love or whatever, or that you know people are out there using and you just want to tell them, stop using that because it's a piece of crap?
I think it depends on it depends on where the technology is at. So one of my favorite tools right now is mem.ai. mem.ai, and that's I call it second brain, because it literally, you dump all of your notes and thoughts in there, it connects with your calendar, it connects with your email, and it reads all of that and stores it in a way that you can search it like you can ChatGPT. So if I say to ChatGPT, I want you to brainstorm ideas for content marketing, it'll give me something. The more specific I am, the better the answer. MEM is the same, but for your notes. So I don't have to store my notes in any folder structure or anything like that. I can just dump it in, put some hashtags in there if I want to, don't have to, and leave it there. And I can interrogate it in two ways. I can either search for, and very, very conversationally search for, you know, MEM, what's my VAT number for my business? Because I can never remember that. It's somewhere in the ether. Or what's my brand colors? What's the hex code for my brand colors? Because I use that all the time and I can never find it. And it's there. Mm-hmm. It's just there. But the other thing you can do with it is you can load website information into it, PDF information into it, and store it in a MEM. And then it's kind of like your trained ChatGPT. So it knows all that information that's in there. And I can then ask it, tell me, you know, I can put my client's information in there and go, tell me what they do. What should be their summary? What do I need to know about them? What's their pain points that they solve? What's the challenges that they have? And it'll tell me. And it's like, what, $10 a month, $8 a month? It's insanely powerful.
Wow.
There's lots and lots of tools out there. I mean, I use the Superpower Chrome ChatGPT browser extension. That's a big mouthful to say. I'll send you the link after the conversation. And what Superpower does is, you know, if anybody's used ChatGPT and you put a long document in there, you know it cuts off after so many words. When you deal with transcripts all the time, which can be 45 minutes long, that's really frustrating, because when I put the second part of that transcript in, whenever I've figured out where that second part comes to, it's forgotten about the first part. And then, like, I'm asking it questions and just tell me about what I've just put in, not the first bit. So Superpower, one of the things that it does, amongst many other things, is it has automated prompts in there to help load documents in as one whole in chunks. And it, you just copy and paste. And it does all the hard work for you. And you can organize your ChatGPT sessions into folders, which is really useful, because I use different sessions for different clients or for different purposes. So that's really, you know, and it's free. So the guy, you know, the guy's built that for free, just out of a passion project. And you can go on the extension. You can buy him a pizza. He's got a donation button on there. Bless him.
Yeah.
So it just proves, though, you don't need to be in this day and age with everything that you've got now. You don't need to be a big company to be producing useful software. So gone are the days when you had to go to the enterprise solution. And I use Riverside as an example. Gone are the days when you had to go to Riverside because they were the only ones that you could trust to do the job well. Actually, now there's quite a lot of solopreneurs, small businesses, and AI startups and tech startups that are competing with the big boys really, really well, because you don't even need to be able to code these days to produce stuff. So the tech's literally everywhere. We've never been more spoilt for choice. And that's why a lot of these businesses are acquiring the smaller businesses, because they can get them cheap now because they're everywhere. Everybody's doing a startup somewhere down the line. They can acquire them rather than build it themselves and roll it up into their own technology. And largely, these technologies are now much more compatible than they ever were as well. So it's much more easy to integrate when they do buy them.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if I am wanting to create content for my business, I am faced potentially with the paradox of choice, because there are so many choices out there that it can be really hard to say, okay, this is the tool that I'm going to use and learn. Because like anything else, there is going to be some kind of learning curve associated with that. And if that's not your primary business, right, there is still a good case to be made to say, hey, I can reach out to someone else who actually knows how to use all these tools. I know I could learn them, right? It's the same as, do I change my oil in my car myself? Because I can learn to do that. It's not that challenging. Just about anyone could change the oil in their car themselves. Or do I take it to the shop and let them do it and pay a little bit extra for the convenience and not having to spend the time learning how to accomplish these things myself, because my time may be more valuable spent elsewhere, right? Maybe I don't have the half hour to spare to change my oil, or the space to do it.
It almost definitely is more valuable spent elsewhere. almost definitely. The only people that I would encourage to be creating content for social themselves are people who really enjoy creating the content for social, regardless of their business. And also those folks who make it their pretty much their only marketing channel. Because then it becomes worth it. Then it becomes worth the time.
Right.
But if social is just part of your mix, or you don't enjoy it, which is the vast majority of people, if I'm honest, it's not even about the social media platform itself. It's about utilizing the technology. There's always a challenge with some technology down the line. You know, everybody, you know, you mention Windows to somebody, everybody rolls their eyes. You mention Teams, everybody rolls their eyes. You mention Zoom, everybody rolls their eyes. The list goes on and on and on. Like, everybody's got their favorites. Everybody's got the things they hate. And that's well, I mean, that's pretty much why I started Javelin back in February, was because I have recognized that what I'd done as for the business that I worked in, the Modular Analytics company, now Mojo CX, I could do that for other businesses and take that pressure away from other leaders in their business. And yeah, there are other businesses out there that will create content. You know, pretty much any marketing agency can take a video that you send them and they'll produce you, you know, 4 or 5 nicely polished clips and things like that. And the point I started Javelin with was, first of all, that's outdated now. Nobody likes polished clips anymore. I actually think polished clips go down less well, unless they're on your website. There is a time and a place for them. You create them once, they go on your website, you leave them there. If you're creating content for socials, I don't think people appreciate brand polished, 2-3 minute product services videos. Like, nobody likes them. Nobody watches them.
Right.
We scroll past them all the time. And it's just a waste of money. Unless you've got the budget to just throw the money at it and you don't care, which isn't the vast majority of us, then it's a waste of effort. So I started Javelin to kind of, you know, I realized that there was a bunch of people out there who just hate the technology, appreciated the power of social media, just didn't know where to start with things. And I'm like, well, I'm the other side of that coin. I love the technology. Yeah, I do. Like everybody, I curse it regularly, daily. Me and my co-founder for my latest business, Phil, we regularly exchange messages, and the messages are pretty simple. I hate technology and variations of that with expletives thrown in. But we take that pain so our clients don't have to. That's the point of the business. It's like, oh, I can deal with that. I've been a software engineer. You know, I trained as a software engineer 20 years ago. Wow, that feels like a real long time. I trained as a software engineer because I enjoy coding. I enjoy working with computers. But also acknowledge that, you know, as a CEO, as a founder, who are probably most likely to be the people who represent their business on socials, they've got a billion other things to be doing. You know, you're raising money for investment, you're dealing with accounting, you're dealing with tax and HMRC. If you're in the UK, your VAT things, you've got, you know, then you've got operations. Tech founders are usually involved in the product somewhere down the line, so they're in all sorts of committees and oversights. And then they've got employees, they've got one-to-ones, they've got hiring, they've got firing, they've got HR going on. Guys, the last thing you need to be doing is creating social media content. And no wonder it gets deprioritized, right? Like, if you were already doing it, you wouldn't be looking at my services. And that's the point, right? Is like, even, you know, I'm even working with digital agencies who do it for their clients. Even they can't prioritize it for themselves because paid work comes first. I look at my content, and my content comes at the back end of the week because I've done my paid work first, because that's the way the cookie crumbles.
I wonder if people are out there thinking about content, right? And they don't have a content strategy. They know they need to approach social, but they've got that one person who's like, this is the person that we would have talking about our product or services or what have you, but they don't have time every day or every week to think through video content. And they're just saying, it's too much time that I have to devote. What do you say to them?
T- there's two angles to that, right? First of all, is if it's important enough, you'll make time. And this is what I say to a lot of people on a lot of subjects. If it's important enough to you, you'll make the time. Just like going to the gym, just like spending time with your family, just like taking a holiday. If it's important enough, you will find the time. Time isn't the problem. It's the prioritization that's the problem. So first of all, don't kid yourself that you haven't got time, because you do, but you're right in that your priorities are better spent elsewhere a lot of the time. So for me, it's about content is now a game of efficiency. Like, how can you produce as much content as you can in as little time as possible? So if you are writing your own posts, you should be batch creating your posts. You should be creating them all at once, because then you're only using the energy that it takes to get into the process, get into writing the content. You're only doing that once, which means that you're saving, you're being more efficient with your mental energy, because it does take, you've got to switch, you've got to flick that switch, you've got to get into gear, and you've got to think about how you're going to write this. And then once you've written one or two, you're in the swing of things, and then an email comes in, you drop what you're doing, you go and deal with the email. I do that all the time. Like, I really struggle. I've got to shut everything off in order to focus on writing posts. I am terrible for shiny things everywhere.
It's that ADHD. So
first up, block off some time, make it your golden hour. If you are going to do it, make it your golden hour. Don't have anything else open, remove all distractions and get it done. And you can be very effective doing that. The other side of things is repurposing your content. So, you know, most businesses are probably already doing a webinar. They're probably already doing a podcast. They might be, they might already have, you know, an interview with their CEO going on YouTube or whatever. That content is a gold mine for small clips. And the small clips represent your brand and your business and your opinions and your thoughts and your journey. So for me, it's about taking that long form content and breaking it into mini topics and outputting it in as many different ways as you can efficiently. That is the technical part. So you've got the content, you've done the hard work. Or if you don't already do those sorts of things, definitely think about doing them. Podcasts can become a lot of work. It's a lot more work than people think it is. But if you contain it, it can be quite a small, efficient content producer, as you know. So I think, you know, start with something like that where you can compartmentalize it. We know what it's going to be at the beginning. It's got a lot of opportunity to grow. We own that. Let's build it out step by step until we're happy that we're automating all the different parts of it one at a time, or we've got efficient workflows in place. And the beauty of doing content repurposing like that is that from a marketing perspective, you'll start with content topics for the month, say. You'll plan out your next 6 months and you'll say, this month we're going to focus on CX and customer service. Next month we're going to focus on average handling times and metrics. The month after that, we're going to focus on, you know, operations and procedures. And what it allows you to do is to talk about one topic and have a lot of content come out the back of that that reinforces that theme. And you can have a bit of a bee swarm effect, because not only have you got one webinar, you've got 40 or 50 clips that you and your whole team can be using to post online about, and you're all talking about the same things and you're all aligned. Yeah. And it's probably all same people that are in there. You're gaining familiarity with your clients and your ideal audience. And it helps to reinforce that message that everybody knows what they're doing, whether that's the case or not. All you have to do is have a shop window. Nobody needs to know what goes on behind the shop window. That's all it's there for. It's, you know, everybody thinks big businesses have everything nailed on, but they don't. They just have an expensive shop window and everything behind the scenes is a band-aid. So, you know, just making it easy for your people to get on social by creating it. You know, that's half the battle. People say to me all the time, like, Paul, I don't know what to, you know, I want to post for the business. I know I'm going to get a lot of business from posting consistently on LinkedIn. I don't know what to post about. Well, the business should be providing you with that. Like, that's not the salesperson's job, really. It can be, if they're keen enough to do it, they can be. But ideally, in an ideal world, it's their CEO's been, you know, on a stage talking about something really important, and we've took that 30-minute video, we've turned it into 200 mini clips in different formats and colours and you know, everything else. And here you go, here's a library, take your pick, post about some of it. Brilliant. Now I know what I can post about. So, you know, that's my two bits of advice is, if you don't kid yourself that you don't have the time to do it, because you do. Your time is probably better spent doing other things. If it is better spent doing other things, then make sure that the time that you do spend creating the raw inputs for your content are as efficient as possible. Create it once. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can do 10 or 12 2-minute mini topics. That's fine. It's still not as efficient as doing a 30-minute conversation like we are right now about a topic, getting things off your chest. It's very cathartic, I find. Get things off your chest and talk about your passions, things that irritate you, things that you know, like, that you love. Be a little bit polarizing and have an opinion. Dare to have an opinion and not be vanilla. And then give that to someone else, because that you've done your part. You've downloaded your brain and your thoughts and your brand, your personal brand, into that video. Then that video can go off to somebody else and they can do clever things with it to turn it into lots of content for your team.
Yeah, I love that you brought up repurposing content or even reusing content, right? So there's repurposing, right? I can take content and maybe I've got a video clip, but I can also take a quote from that and throw that on an image, or I can turn it into an audio without the video and maybe just do a waveform. But I can also reuse clips that I've used in the past. I think people think that they always have to continually be putting out brand new content, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, do get new content, keep it fresh. But if you've got a message that really resonates once, let it really resonate again later, because sometimes that message is evergreen. And we think that people might get sick of seeing that clip over and over. And the chances are not that many people saw it the first time, but a whole different cohort of people are going to see it the next time around and the next time around after that. And so it is absolutely okay to reuse good content. If it was good the first time, it's probably going to be good the second time. So, don't post it again the next day, but feel free, reuse your content. Paul, this has been
all of your content is you, Rob.
That's right. And we both can attest to that. We get bored of our own content for sure. That's why we talk to each other so much.
Yeah.
Paul, it has been far too long coming. I can hear your new baby in the background who needs attention from Papa. So thank you for joining Next in Queue. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to talk to you again soon.
Amazing. Looking forward to it, Rob. Anytime.
Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy Two and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoy this podcast, please, by all means, subscribe and or rate this podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. As always, thanks for listening.